Welcome back and thank you for listening to another episode of Made to Cast. I am your host, Brent Hashimoto, and today I get the opportunity to sit with a multi-angler assassin, brand ambassador, and one half of the brand new, super popular already podcast, Doc Talks Fishing. We're sitting with Mr. Liam Wetter. Thank you for joining me today, buddy.
Well, thanks for having me, Brent. This is always a blast coming on these things. I love doing podcasts. I mean, it's one of those things where you just get to sit down and kind of have a raw, unedited conversation about what goes on in the industry, and it's always fun.
I agree. I couldn't agree more. And I mean, I can honestly say that when I saw you guys promote that you were starting a podcast, I thought, out of anybody that should have a podcast and hasn't already, I don't know how you two didn't have one. Like, it was one of those things like, oh, this should have been something a long time ago. Because both I've talked to you very little, and I've talked to your other half, Mr. Gord Pizer, yep, only a couple times as well. So it's not like I have expansive conversations, but when I have, even just for the moment of talking to you at the ice fishing show, you guys are so well versed in conversation, and it makes sense when you guys had this podcast going. So, there was something I was specifically going to ask for the podcast, but I'm going to push that back because I would more want people to understand kind of who you are. Just kind of introduce yourself as kind of how you got into, you have a unique upbringing through fishing. I'm sure that you can kind of share through that story just because of your situations, but what kind of got you into being, you doubled down into fishing, so to speak. So maybe you can just kind of share a little bit of your story when it comes to that.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, fishing's been something that I've done for my entire life. Growing up with Gord Pizer, obviously, you fish a lot growing up. I can't remember. Like, I'll say this to my friends. I moved to Kingston, Ontario for school. Okay. I'm studying marketing. But I remember I'll always joke with them that I grew up, and every single weekend, basically both days on the weekend and a lot of days after school, were spent on the water. Since I was like, I mean, I'd been fishing since I was two, but I'd probably been on that, you know, heavy fishing since I was like five or six.
Right.
Probably more like five. And so going away to Kingston and starting school, that was like crazy. All of a sudden I'm not on the lake every day. And it was the weirdest thing. But I mean, yeah, I've always had a huge passion for fishing. I've always been super interested in the sport, trying to learn, trying to ask a whole bunch of questions. And then, yeah, I always had this thing where I knew I wanted to stay in the industry. That was always a goal of mine. And I just didn't really know how. But, you know, you have social media, you have podcasting, YouTube, all these different outlets to express fishing.
Right.
And that's really what I did. I just doubled down on that. That's exactly right. So I'm studying marketing in school, which I think helped me along the ways of these sort of things. Marketing is, yeah, for sure. Like, marketing is one of those things where it's a very broad kind of a topic that covers just promoting. So personal marketing, like personal branding, was actually something I studied quite a bit in school. Creating a personal brand, marketing yourself.
Right.
So it all plays a huge part. And yeah, like you said, doubling down, just making more content, podcasting, making videos is something that I started doing too, for anybody who's maybe interested in kind of a look at what it's like to fish with Gordo and I, or some of the stuff that I'm doing technique-wise, strategy-wise. That's all. I'm trying to document all of that. And moving forwards, it's just going to be doubling down even harder and kind of putting my head down and grinding that sort of thing for a while.
That's amazing, man. So, like, that's... And that's what I find so curious about. I mean, to put aside, and for those that don't know, Gord Pizer, legend up here in Canada. I feel like it's North America. I believe it's worldwide. But Gord has always been an icon for such a long time. And your ability to grow up with him, like, so his story is big, and you know, editor for Outdoor Magazine and all these things. But your unique ability to kind of... how can I put this? Another person might sit in that same boat or in that same ice hut or wherever Gord's fishing, and him trying to instill that knowledge and still be like, I'm just enjoy fishing. Like, I just like throwing it out there and catching something. That's good enough. But what you did is you took it into like you educated yourself through your own means, as well as taking any tips or advice, and then built, because I've talked to Gord like online, mm-hmm. and he has mentioned you about something that you did in order to get this particular fish in the boat. And so it's not like you're just, I want to make it clear that you're not coattailing anybody. You're paving your own way, but you've learned from somebody who's obviously very experienced, but you haven't just let that be the thing. You've kind of snowballed that into your own, lane, your own avenue, your own chin. And I'm super impressed about, because the knowledge that you're going to bring to the table is from a different perspective that maybe Gord's had over all the years. Mm-hmm. Not to obviously diminish his learnings and what he's done, but you have a different outlook now, right? So that's what I kind of want to pick your brain about, because you're tackling things with, he didn't come up with live scope and all these sonar, right? Like he's trying to build into those, but it's like my kids that are growing up with iPads when we didn't. There's something that's inherent in them that kind of is going to put them at an edge as they move towards what the future holds as far as technology and fishing goes, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's really a large portion also why I want to talk to you, because the show is about fishing. It's for fishermen. It's for people that build lures for fishing. And that's what I wanted to pick your brain on, because there's so much about the technique of fishing, which I think you and Gord put a lot of emphasis into, not just fishing, but the technique and the reason why we fish those places, right?
Mm-hmm.
So first I want to ask you, because you are a multi-species angler, you're tackling everything. Do you have, and it might be loaded, do you have like a hierarchy of season where that is the fish that you want? Like, is it like, I can't wait for muskie to open, I'm all about muskie, and then everything else will fall in? Or is it just as important to get out there and smash the crappie when they're schooling up and you get those opportunities as well, right? Like, do you have a hierarchy of what you're really shooting for?
So, like, we'll always joke that Gord said this for a long time. My favorite species is what I'm fishing for at the time.
Right.
each species has, ideal seasons. Or, say, for example, in the fall when the Ciscos move up to spawn and the muskies are intercepting them, that's a prime time to catch big, like, thick muskies. Or the fall, similar thing happens with smallmouth or, crappies when they're starting to school or starting to move up into the shallows kind of to spawn, and they're all through the reeds. There are prime times throughout the season that I find where I really enjoy catching those certain species.
Right.
Excuse me, 100% there are certain times of the year that I look forward to specifically. But I mean, just as a whole, a general, it is multi-species. I'm excited to do all of them. But right. Like musky opener, that gets me excited. It's the third Saturday in June up here, and that's like Christmas morning every day for me. super pumped. I absolutely love musky fishing. I'm a multi-species guy at heart, but I also really love to catch big fish.
Yeah.
That's always something it's just, I know a lot of people, everyone will say they like to catch big fish, but I like to hunt big fish. Right. I'm interested in numbers, absolutely, but I would be more interested in like working hard to try and catch a giant lake trout than to just have fun smashing them all day.
Right.
That's kind of always been my mindset. So
right.
when I can put myself in positions to catch the largest fish possible, that's always kind of what gets me hyped up.
Well, and that's what, listening to, because for me, I always try to fancy myself a fisherman that makes baits, but these years that have gone by, I've been more of a bait maker that fishes when he has the opportunity. that's one thing that, like, especially the podcast you just had with musky, talking about musky fishing. Or was it the first one that was musky fishing? Last one was burbot? Or you might have
released. Nope, you were right the first time.
Okay.
Yeah, we started with burbot.
And that's right. Muskies. So, but there's so much. That this is where like the biology of fish, that you like the knowledge of biology that you have, for an angler is so important. But when I'm listening to it as a bait maker, and I'm listening to you try to explain breeding habits, feeding habits, like nesting areas, like all of these things, there's so much information that I can have as a bait maker to try to make the best bait.
Yeah.
Someone like you who knows those areas will be like, that's the pocket. Like that's the pocket you're looking for, because I think that's one of the hardest things and challenges for baits. If you're making a specific bait, is to say, okay, I'm fishing for, you know, muskie. When are you fishing for muskie? Like, because that bait's not a universal bait. There's going to be times where they're up shallow, they're deep, or they're feeding on small things. They're looking for one big meal so that they can, like, there's so many things that you're kind of going through as far as bait goes. So when I listen to those podcasts, it opened my eyes to there's not one magic bullet. You have to have so many different strengths about what you're making and different things that you're making to target different species. But
absolutely,
with saying that, and I'm kind of going back and forth here, you talking about being a multi-species with bait making, I've appreciated, because I was never a panfish fisher. And that's one thing I've seen you post, these monster crappie that you're holding, and even giant perch. I've learned to appreciate that super small finesse stuff and getting down and targeting, learning kind of when they're spawning and targeting those panfish, because catching a really big crappie feels really good too. Like that's a good feeling, man. On some ultralight gear and getting just an absolute slab. I don't want to say it's as good as catching, like, you know what I mean, a big old bucket mouth or something, but that is a fantastic feeling. So you don't accidental fish. And by that, you're going out and you're targeting something.
Yeah.
Correct? So like, how do you plan for those trips? Because usually if I'm fishing for something and I catch a crappie, I'm switching to crappie stuff. I'm going ultralight and I'm switching to, but you're going out targeting something. So that's a different thing altogether, right?
Mm-hmm.
So are you very specific to today is only going to be X species? Because there's 100%. A point in time where you can kind of catch everything, right?
100%. Everything is specific. You start out fishing and you want to get a bite. You hope that you just catch a fish. And just to back up to the large crappie thing, when I say big fish, I'm not talking literally big fish. I mean big fish relative to the species.
Sure.
So I'd be pumped to catch a 14-inch crappie, because that to me is a big fish.
Yeah, right.
But then you talk 14-inch crappie compared to a 52-inch muskie. Right. I mean, if you look at it just from, like, if you back up, well, okay, a 14-inch crappie isn't a big fish compared to a 14-inch muskie. But a 50-inch muskie, but in relativity, that's a huge fish.
I agree.
But I always, like, even growing up, I've never, because that's the one thing that I think a lot of anglers maybe should know that would benefit them. And that's why we have this podcast too, is a lot of these guys are extremely smart that we're talking to, extremely smart. They've dedicated their entire career to learning the patterns of these fish, where they go, exactly what they're feeding on, their exact behaviors. They'll have radio transmitting, like basically trackers on these fish, studying all of their movement patterns. These guys are the smartest in the industry when it comes to the knowledge of the actual fish. But a lot of them spend so much time studying the fish, getting to know the fish, that the only time they ever report their findings is to the M&R, so they can put in proper regulations, so they can have better understandings of these fish.
Right.
But it's very, very rare that anglers actually get access to this information.
Right.
And so that was our goal, is to give these guys a place where they can share their knowledge, and then give anglers a spot where they can have access to this knowledge. Because, like you said, I had a bit of a unique upbringing, fishing with Gord, learning kind of those tactics where he grew up, gained all his knowledge, gained all of his experience and skill, not fishing with any technology. And then now we have technology into the game. And so I just wanted to say that, and this isn't a dock on LiveScope whatsoever, but we always joke that, you're kind of fishy. Like you're just kind of inclined towards understanding and catching fish.
Right.
And so that was all I learned how to catch fish without sonar imaging.
Yes.
And I'm very thankful for that because I got to learn the species and I got to really kind of dial in on certain techniques, how to catch the fish. And then when you implement technology on top of that, it just kind of accentuates.
Right. You're so enhancing the experience as opposed to
100%.
Accidentally finding them and seeing them.
And I think now with a lot of the kids is, I mean, I'm a kid too, but like kids a little bit younger than me who are growing up may learn to fish with the technology as opposed to learning the fish and then implementing the technology. Right. And I think that's one of the things that has led to like my success is understanding the fish first and then implementing the technology.
Right.
And that was always like, Gord's always been huge into biology, learning the biology of fish.
Right.
And that plays a huge part into catching those fish,
right,
learning those fish. So to go back to your original question, do I fish for specific species? Yes, 100%. I don't think that ever in my life I've just gone out hoping to catch a bite, hoping to catch whatever, or maybe a multi-species day. Like, yeah, I'll throw in a walleye rod when I'm musky fishing, and if I find a school, I may catch a few in between casts, or
right,
if I'm smallmouth fishing today, I may throw in some walleye stuff too, or vice versa, doesn't matter. But I'm going out with a target in mind,
right,
and that's all based on biology, 100%. I know, okay, this time of the year, the walleyes are doing this, roughly, like, obviously, you'll have to tweak your technique based on daily findings or the mood, activity of the fish, location of the fish. You'll have to switch that up. But going out there, I have a pretty good idea at, if I want to catch walleyes, right, roughly what they're going to be doing that time of the year, and then I double down and dial in on those fish.
That's smart. Yeah, I mean, that's... I agree with what you're saying with technology, and I've kind of wondered, and you're kind of confirming that as well, is like, are you using it, are you stumbling upon fish and then watching them with, you know, live scope and things like that, or mm-hmm. are you enhancing the knowledge that you already have by knowing where yeah. they are, finding them, seeing their behavioral patterns, and then being able to pull them out, like enhancing your experience versus, because realistically, that's, I don't have any fancy accessories on my boat. I do have a fish finder. Like I got a Raymarine like fish finder, but it's nothing high end. Like it's
mm-hmm.
decent. It's more of a depth finder, to be honest with you. But that's the thing is trying to understand. I get more out of like topographical maps to yep. to learn the topography of the lake. But that is a good feeling, is you pick your shoals, you pick wherever you are, and you go there, and then you find the thing. If it shows up on my fish finder, it doesn't mean I'm catching it either, right? Like it's...
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah.
But with you talking about the biology of it, that's, to go back to your first episode on burbot, I had just got back from an ice fishing trip. I think it was the weekend before you guys released that. I had just got back, and I really wanted to catch a burbot. I know nothing mm-hmm. about ice fishing. I'm a horrible ice fisher. I'll stand there and say that I don't like ice fishing because I've just, it's a guess to me. It's a totally new thing. That's totally different. But we stayed on like ice bungalows, like on the lake.
Yep.
Which we had a good time. There's four of us. We were smashing walleye, but not on purpose. You know what I'm saying? Like we had baits yeah. in, we were jigging, we were doing all the things that you see people ice fishing do, and we're being successful, but there wasn't a big reason why. Now we mm-hmm. had a couple holes with some tip ups outside, and this was specifically, you guys told this, I don't remember if it was Gord or the person you're talking to, or it was you, but we had a tip up go up. So we jump up and we run out there and we grab it, and there's nothing on the line, but it's ran. We pull it all the mm-hmm. way in. We check the bait's still there. We put it down. Literally get back inside, 2 minutes later, pop up, we think it's the flags busted. So we go out, but that's all it was. We reeled it up, there was nothing there. Mm-hmm. I my son, at that ice fishing show that I saw you and Gordon, we talked for a bit, my son won a Helix 5 fish finder for like ice fishing. Oh, nice. That's kind of what made me go to this ice fishing trip was we had it sitting there and I was like, you know what, I'll book an ice fishing trip and we'll use it. So it's a normal it's a normal sonar, but it has like the down imaging for ice fishing.
2D.
Yeah. So I had that and I was putting it on and there was a couple times where I would see like big markings come up to like middle column and then just kind of fade back down and go back up. And I was like, what? And I'm trying my best to like try to get it to latch on because when the walleye were schooling around and when I did that, I'd smash them every time. Like you could almost watch them come and hit your bait and you'd set it. This would never happen. And then I get back and, you know, we didn't catch one burbot at all. And I get back and I listen to your podcast and one of you guys literally said the exact same flag story, which is basically something of, you know, a breeding burbot, or I think it was breeding, would take it and swim something that it didn't like away. It would kind of take it out of its zone, take it out of its zone. And it was the exact same story that happened to our flag on the ice. And the same thing with them coming off the bottom and they'll hit up in the higher water column. Like there's not really a limit to them.
Yep.
And the point of me telling this story is that knowing the biology of the fish you're fishing for, if I would have known, if I would have listened to that podcast 3 days before I left versus 3 days after, I truly believe I could have caught more, I could have caught burbot. And it's just off of you guys understanding the biology of it. Nipissing has burbot. The shed beside us caught, I think, two or three while we were there. So, but it was just knowing that understanding. Again, I wish that would have came out earlier for that information. Because again, I feel like I would have been more successful. But I like I said in the beginning, I think that's what you guys do so well is your exchange of knowledge is very clear and it's not the only way I could put it to somebody else is like how Neil deGrasse Tyson can take astrophysics, something that nobody understands, and be like, oh, I can understand that the way you're saying it. You guys take fish biology where you're like, oh, those patterns don't make sense. And then when you explain it, you're like, oh, I've been in that scenario. Like I get what you're talking about because I've been there. I know what happened there. You guys fish enough that you have these things. Which kind of leads me to the next point that I want to talk to, which is you guys do seminars. How many years have you been doing seminars personally?
Oh, me? I've only been doing them 2 years.
Okay.
Actually.
Well, I know that I've seen your name. You've done quite a few in those 2 years then, because I've seen your name posted in a lot of these like banners and stuff about doing these seminars. Doing this podcast and us just having a conversation, it's easy because it's just us two talking and then other people hear it later. Like you can remove yourself from an audience, but to stand up and especially being 2 years into it, you can remember what it's like your first few, even I'm sure you still get it now. There's a difference between standing in front of a live audience.
Oh yeah.
And sharing this information, right? What's that transition to, because it's not like you go take a course and you certify yourself. You've put the time and you get the knowledge and now you stand in front of a group and be like, this is the knowledge that I've learned.
Yeah.
Right. There's gotta be, nerves for sure, but that's not the word I'm looking for. Apprehension of the knowledge that you have that you're transferring. Do you know what I'm saying? How do you get over that threshold to be like, this is the right information? I don't know if I'm saying it right. I'm not.
No,
that
no.
Guy.
Yeah, no. I know exactly what you're saying. Well, yeah. I mean, in the beginning, there are obviously some nerves, but I started doing them with board, so it was kind of like easier that way because you have the crutch of another person there.
Right.
If you fumble your words or lose your train of thought, you're not just standing there twiddling your thumbs embarrassed. But as for like transferring the knowledge, it is one of those times where you actually have to like think, okay, what do I know and like what could I teach? Because you have all the knowledge in your head. But now you have to transpose it. And then so it's like, okay, well, what is it that I need to teach? And then you have some main points like, okay, I think this would really benefit anglers. You go through the list. Like when we do seminars, we'll do them on specific topics, but we're also just trying to help anglers become better. And I mean, the other thing too, and one of the points is just to go back to what we were talking about in the beginning, me fishing with Gord and then learning how to kind of do things your own way, is once you reach a certain point of knowledge, you can begin teaching yourself.
Right.
So what I want anglers to know is we have access to a lot of information. If you listen to our podcast, you listen to your podcast, there's access to information. But once you reach a certain point, okay, I know this much. Well, now I can start teaching myself some other things.
Right.
And I can start kind of, okay, I know enough now that I can kind of branch off and become my own angler. And I think that's really important for people to know. So we try to teach people just a lot of good information for angling that they can then turn into things that can be usable in their own day-to-day.
Right. Like give them like a solid foundation to kind of build their own experience through. Yeah. I mean, I see you guys doing, and I mean, I got to stick around for that ice seminar as long as my kids let me stand there because they wanted to get going. But that was the first thing I thought of, and it was you. It's funny because Gord almost gets that passer because obviously he's been doing this for so many years. But I saw the confidence of just the information, the passing of information. Because I even on this, I'm like, somebody might listen to this, and I might, you know what I mean? You don't edit yourself. You're in front of everybody. But yeah, the thing that would get me the most, and this one I'm going to ask you, I didn't stick around. Do you guys do a straight Q&A? Like a just, where you guys, I want to ask, what is the, for like, I guess is you're doing different seminars, so that's a loaded question. Because I was going to say, like, what's the most common question? But I guess if you're doing an ice fishing seminar, it's different than if you're doing a muskie seminar. Okay, well, that's fine. When did you, because we were talking a little bit before this, and I was saying that, like, you have affiliation, sponsorships through things. Mm-hmm. How did you get yourself, for, like, those people that are trying to come up and get to the point where they can get to your platform, right? Like, to get to that level of platform, how do you get to, like, do those things approach you, or do you approach other people, mm-hmm. like, do you approach companies? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I know what you're saying. I'm just trying to think of a good, because I have affiliations with companies in the industry. But all it is that I've had, you know, I've used these brands for a very long time,
right?
And they have the ability to help me make this
absolutely
a real thing.
Absolutely.
So it's not like I have these lures I don't want to lie to my fan base. So the only thing that I ever talk about is things that I actually use.
That's good.
And so it's like, yeah, you have these companies that work with you, want to work with you, are willing to work with you, and they just help make everything work. So yeah, I mean, to answer your question, in today's day and age, it's so important to just get yourself out there. I mean, the sponsors now are, if you're a guide, you're a little bit more inclined to sponsorships. If you fish tournaments, you're more inclined to sponsorships. But if you don't do any of those, it's very important, I mean, to be online making content. And by content, I mean, that could just be photos, podcasting, YouTube videos, blogging, articles, anything like that. Content's a huge umbrella. but yeah, if you provide value to companies, and they see that, they understand the value, you'll certainly be approached.
Right.
So if you want to do it, you just need to, okay, think for a second, how could I provide value in this industry? And once you kind of have that idea, take that idea and run with it, and then the companies will come. You can obviously approach companies, like, that works, but I think it's like, if a company comes to you and they're willing to work with you and want to work with you, and it's a company that you like and enjoy their product,
right,
use their product for years, that just gives you a really, like, that's a really solid relationship. So yeah, my advice, I mean, would just be, you know, figure out what kind of value you can provide, and everyone can provide value. it's not just me or Gord or any, it's not just us that can provide value. Everyone can provide their own level of value. Everyone has their own experiences. So
right.
Once you figure that out and you dial in on that, absolutely, like, companies will approach and you can make this industry work for you.
And that I'll reiterate that on my end, making lures and things like that. I know there's a lot of small guys, and I mean large companies, but like pro staff is a big thing for people. For me, I get people, and I mean a lot of the people that I talk to in the lure making, will get emails constantly that says, "Hey, listen, I've got, you know, 1,000 followers. Send me some baits, and I'll post them all over." Like, and then they'll have 3 pictures on their profile. It's even on my level is. Someone like you, I have no problem being like, listen, this isn't, just try this bait. You do it on your own if you want. You don't have to post about it. You don't have to, I just want your opinion on it. I'll send you stuff because I know that you're putting work in. I won't even know you. There's people that I don't know that I've followed and I've been following, and they have a catalog of success pictures, and I don't know them from the next guy, but I'm way more inclined to send somebody as a company, so to speak, let's air quote that, you know what I mean, send it to someone like yourself because you have that experience, you've put that time, and you're actually doing the thing that I'm looking for, versus the person that just wants to be there, has a couple pictures. Yeah, they might be involved, but you're not really proving yourself. So just to echo what you're saying, it is a big thing to get yourself out there, to do the thing that you're trying to support, because you can't get support from a company that you have nothing for them to gain off, right? Because at the end of the day, that's, for me, I've sent baits. Mine's always been, I never want promotion over the stuff that I send. I always just want feedback. So I don't need to see posts and like, hey, this is cool. I just want feedback. I'll send it. And I'm very particular to who I send it to. And I've actually learned a lesson with, I mean, you'd mentioned guides. I thought guides would be a big ticket for me to sell, like send my stuff to. But exactly what you had said, so many guides get sponsorships through places that they don't want to throw your baits. Because they're guiding. Mm-hmm. So they have their specifics that they're going to throw. They don't want to throw something new when they have a new clientele or whatever. They want to be successful. And they don't really fish too much for themselves. So it's always guided. So they don't really throw your stuff. So, and when they do, it's not the thing that they're sponsored by. So they're kind of leery on giving you the feedback, even in private. So I agree with what you're saying with that. As far as a bait maker goes, be careful if you're sending to guides, because they got to be kind of close to you if they're open in that sense, to give you that information. Well,
the other thing too with guides is, I mean, that's hard work. You have to put people on fish constantly.
Yeah, I agree.
And in my position, I get to play around. So I get to experiment. I get to try and learn. But with a guide, when you have to put people on fish, you don't do a lot of experimenting with clients in the boat. You do what you know works. Yeah,
exactly.
And so, I mean, yeah, that is a fair point.
But that's the lesson, like that's kind of the thing that I didn't realize. I understood, but I didn't think about until afterwards, because you're thinking, who knows musky fishing better than a musky guide? And then you send musky baits, you're like, oh, he's successful because of the, you know, what he knows and what he uses. He's not necessarily wanting to try something new to get better if he's already successful. Like, there's too much money and risk and time put into it for them to try their own thing, right? Because of your information, and maybe this is something that's already been done and I'm not sure of, but have you looked into working with any, now I know that you have, I mean, you're wearing a Crush City hat. Do you have direct input and intel into development of products for like that you could be a team with or be a part of to develop, because you have so much knowledge, you might have an insight that, like I said, someone like myself, who's just making these things, doesn't have, right? Because you've had so much time on the water that you would have an input that, you know, somebody else might not have. Is that something that you've ever considered doing? Or like I said, maybe you do, and I'm just not privy to it.
Yeah, I definitely do that, but I'm open to it too. Like, I mean, that's the thing that comes with tons of time on the water is, you know, you learn things and you figure things out. And yeah, I mean, that's one of the reasons that companies work with guys that are on the water all the time is to have access to that on the water knowledge, that up to date, you know, present, the things that are going on in the industry on the water right now. Right. So yeah, I mean, that plays quite a big role in this fishing thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I just thought, like, again, I know that you have an input on so many things, or like, information on so many things, that being transferred directly into bait making, it's invaluable. It's, for example, when I was talking to Gord at the ice fishing show, I had one of my big baits. He immediately grabbed it and was like, "This is what I don't like about it." And that, as a bait maker, I feel like a lot of feelings are tried to be saved because there's so much heart that goes into something.
Mm-hmm.
What doesn't get is the truth from somebody like yourself or Gord, the reasons why you would never throw it. Now, don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. He was like, "I would throw this all day long if it didn't have this and this. Change these and I would throw this." And that's the honest truth, but that's something that there's things that A, aesthetically, B, hypothetically, work in a bait maker's mind of why this will be the new target. But we're always trying to, we want to catch fish, but we also don't want to copy anybody. So we're trying to be new and inventive in the market, but that also doesn't always, you know, benefit the actual angler.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying? So someone like yourself being able to work into a company and share that information would be invaluable information for the maker, because then you're moving that kind of stuff aside.
Yeah. Honesty is super important, because that's how things get made, right? And then taking biology into account, match the hatches is such a common term, but it is so true. I mean, why are you using a lure? Well, you're trying to imitate, you're using it as a tool to imitate the forage of the fish.
Right.
So if you can dial in on that, that's only going to be beneficial. And I mean, when it comes to honesty, like, yeah, I think that there's a lot of passion, pride, and time that goes into making lures. I can only imagine. I've never even attempted to do it because of, I mean, obviously the work and the precision that has to go into it. Sure. If you have a little nodule that's out of place, your bait's not going to run properly. Like,
right.
They've got to be perfect. So the honesty there, yeah, you're obviously going to tread lightly, but I think it is important. I mean, especially like if I care for like the greater good of your company, I think the honesty is important. It's like, you know, when you have a best friend, it's important to be honest with that person. And, you know, same goes with bait making. If you're honest, they can just get better, you know, dial in on presentations, do things that match the hatch a little better. And yeah, no, 100%.
Right. I mean, and that's the whole thing with the honesty portion. As a bait maker, I should never think that I'm at my peak. Like, you should never feel like this is the best it's going to get. The only way to keep growing in that sense is for someone to come down and sometimes knock you off your high horse. If you think you're doing something great and someone's like, "Hey, this isn't the greatest." Sometimes we need that eye opening, because you think everything you do is, if you think everything you're doing is the best it's going to get, that's your plateau. You're only going to be offended. You got to be able to kind of aim your sights higher. And I mean, I think that's everything in life. You always kind of got to set your sights higher.
Yeah, absolutely.
So with right now being kind of the peak, getting into the peak of trade show season, do you have a bunch of stuff lined up right now where you guys are like, are you guys kind of booked in advance, like way in advance, or do you kind of know as they're popping up? The main thing I want to ask, the reason I'm asking, is because the only show that I do is CanCast in Peterborough, yep. Ontario, April 7th. You got anything going there? Or are we going to...
No, I don't think I do.
No? Okay.
April 7th, yeah. I'm wrapping up school then, and then I'm driving back home to spend every day on the water.
That's amazing. So. That's awesome. Yeah, no, I just had to poke in because...
Yeah, that's too bad.
I bugged Gord about it last year, too, to see if he was going to come down, but that's quite the trip to come down to a Sunday event, but...
Yeah, I'll make it out one of these years.
It is honestly, I'm not just saying this. I try to go to every fishing sportsman show in and around this area, and I don't even get to walk the full thing other than setup day, because it's mm-hmm. a 1 day busy event. But for anybody, this is a shameless plug for myself now. For anybody that is in the area of Peterborough, or even if you're not and you want to travel down, I promise you, if you're into fishing, it is worth the trip just in the products alone. So there's brand new products from all the big, you know, developers, a bunch of homemade bait makers, and it's all fishing products. There's no, like, you know what I mean? There's no insurance booths, and, like, a lot of these places have some filler booths to kind of make sure that the show is big and packed. This is 100% fishing all the way through. So anybody that is in the area, make sure you stop by, because I promise you will not leave empty-handed. It's a great show. Again, to wipe that shameless plug out there.
Yeah.
You got to do right. it. So this is, like, as we get towards the end here, I ask a couple questions of everybody that comes through here, and they are just, this is kind of the culmination of the entire podcast, are these questions that I ask. Most people listen to them for the end just to see where things go. The first one that I like to ask, and I know that, so what it is, and it's tough because you're multi-species and you're very specific multi-species. I ask three lures that don't leave your tackle. They could be in, since we fished when you were five. They don't leave you. Doesn't mean you use them every time, but they are the three baits that are like your confidence baits. What are three lures that you always have on you? Like I said, you don't necessarily throw them all the time, but you just have to have them on you. What three of them?
Three of them? Yeah, I mean, for multi-species, there's a lot of stuff. I mean, I usually look at it like, if the target is to take apart an engine, you're going to need this tool set.
Right, right.
And you can't do it without that tool set. I mean, you can't try and take apart an engine with one Phillips head screwdriver.
Right.
So you got to use some stuff. But as for my favorite presentations, I got to go with Nedrig.
Okay. One of them.
A moping technique, a minnow bait, which is basically, for people who don't know, is a minnow style bait with a jig head on the front. And then you have to make sure that it sits horizontally. So it's a little more to the presentation than just a minnow bait and a jig.
Right.
But a Ned Rig, a minnow, and a jerk bait. And jerk bait is universal across almost all species. Like, I'll use jerk bait from, bass, walleye, smash jerk baits all the time.
Right.
Pike, and then all the way up to muskies and musky sized jerk baits. I love fishing jerk baits. They're probably one of my favorite.
Really?
But yeah, Ned's, minnows, and jerk baits.
Interesting.
Those are the three.
Jerkbait is something that's newer to my, like, even bait, like throwing, not my bait. I have pretty much exclusive garage baits now, but like when I was throwing baits, jerkbaits weren't always, they were towards me getting into this, so they were later on. But I never had the success that I was just, again, that's also a knowledge of fishing. I was just not using them at the correct times. But yeah, that's not something I ever really got into.
Yeah. Jerkbaits are cool because they give you a lot of freedom to fish them. Like, you can fish them fast, slow, totally, like, the twitches you impart can all be changed.
Right. To
benefit your success.
Which is, and I mean, that theory behind it is what I try to implement in the things that I make, which is like a multi-purpose weapon. Like, you,
yeah,
if you're fishing slow, you want to move it slow. You want it to have the action that you want at slow paces. You want to be able to burn it if you want to. I agree. So like, it's right in my alley. The fact that I didn't use them too often is arguably the most important question is boat snacks or ice snacks. Or like, what are you taking when you go fishing? What is Liam's must have as far as boat snacks go? When you have that, when you're out, obviously long enough to have a boat snack, which is 20 minutes for me. If I'm out on the water, I need something to snack on.
Yeah, I don't actually, I don't actually eat that much when I'm fishing. But Gordo always brings out some awesome lunches. Those are pretty dang good.
So he brings like a full spread. Like he's not chimping out.
He brings pretty good lunches. Yeah, I gotta give him that. But I would say as far as a boat snack, gotta go with jerky.
Yeah. That's
the classic.
Yeah.
Fuel.
Yeah. You have to. It's everything you need in one source. The other thing I asked, and I mean, I'm sure you've done a lot, but there's always something. I always say, if you were to have 3 days, all expenses paid, anywhere in the world, what are three fish, and even locations, because I feel like that's just as important, but three species that you would, like, bucket list fish? Three trips, all like money's not an issue. 24 hours to do this. Any species, what would your three be?
Because I know I'm gonna give you an answer, and then like 20 minutes later, I'm gonna be like, "Ah, shoot, I should have said that."
That's
so many.
That the first episode, I think I listed mine, and I'm gonna be honest with you, I'm not even gonna remember exactly what they are, but I know tarpon was one of them, arapaima was one of them, I can't even remember what my last one, because the problem is that I've listened to so many. That's my exact thing. I'm like, oh, I like that idea. Like, oh, I would like to do that, right? But for me, tarpon has just been a kind of a fish that I've seen videos of. It's just such like the mouths on them are just so prehistoric. The size, this everything about them, it just looks like so much fun.
Yeah,
arapaima, very much the same thing. But that's more the experience. Like, I don't want to go farm arapaima somewhere. Like, I want to get on that little puddle jumper, like, plane, that little crop duster that takes you to, like, the small area. Then you're backpacking through, you know, jungle, and you get to this creek that is unfished, like, no pressure, and you're catching them in their natural environment. Like, that murky water, that experience. Is what it's the whole thing that's linked together, right? And then you're catching this fish that just doesn't look of this planet. Those were kind of my thoughts, but like, kind of like what you're saying, and I'm just trying to buy you a little time here. Kind of what you're saying is that people have said, even I've talked to musky fishers that were like, musky, like, I want to catch a 54. Or, you know what I mean? Like, that's my bucket list fish, like, is to catch the biggest. Like, I want to catch a bigger one, which is, I'm like, yeah, that's a good point too. Like, that's an achievable bucket list fish for me. So, it doesn't necessarily have to be about going to far off places. Yeah. Some people have said, you know, things that are right in their backyard. It's just, they haven't got to that.
I'll answer this in two different ways. I'll say my most ideal fish that I could catch at home.
Okay.
But then I'll start with my three. If money wasn't an object, if I could go anywhere in the world, travel anything, do anything, what would it be? I might do peacock bass in the rainforest.
Yep.
Arapaima too. Peacocks are so cool looking, and like, being in the jungle just seems sick.
Yeah.
But that would be number one, just the adventure, like you said, the whole experience would be awesome to go and do that. Arapaima too. I think arapaima would be a really neat one as well. Like, that's one of those fish I haven't given a lot of thought to, but might have to start thinking about it. and then I would say probably big white sturgeon in BC. That would be really cool.
Yep.
That would be number two. I love the mountains. I love being out west, BC, the Rockies are super awesome.
Mm-hmm.
I think it'd be cool to just be catching humongous sturgeon right in the mountains.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, that would be super neat.
Not to cut you off, just while you're talking about sturgeon, I just want to put this in there because I've always wanted to catch sturgeon. I'd love to see sturgeon. I'm an instructor for like a trade school instructor, and one of the apprentices that came through had gotten back from BC. This was about a year ago, last year, and he showed me pictures, and he went and did a fly-in sturgeon fishing, like
no way,
with him and his girlfriend, and he said it was the first time the guide had ever had it, but him and his girlfriend double-headed on two sturgeon, both over 8 feet. He's got pictures of them in the water with them. It is the most unbelievable. Like, people don't realize. It's almost like when you tell someone who's never seen a moose how big a moose is. And they're like, oh, that just doesn't make sense. That's not a real creature. Like, when you see a sturgeon being caught on, like, a video, and you're like, that's a big fish. But then you see somebody in the water holding them.
Yeah.
And you're like, that's the Loch Ness Monster. That is a giant animal. So sorry, I don't mean to cut you off, but that is such a cool fish to like that. To catch, that would be awesome. Sorry, you're there.
Just the size of the head too. Oh, it's
unbelievable. Insane. Unbelievable.
Yeah, so I'd love to do that. And then I'd say for the third spot, it's a toss-up. Tarpon would be cool. You know what? Actually, what I've always wanted to catch is a Goliath grouper.
Yes.
Like a 600-pound bass. Oh, it looks like a 600-pound smallmouth.
Yeah. Those videos were my guilty pleasure when I discovered what they were. So let's just say, you know, 7, 8, 9 years ago, whenever it was, that was my guilty pleasure, was watching people take fish that I would, like, be stoked to catch. These, like, 8, 10-pound fish on this giant single hook, and they would bomb it at the footing of a bridge, and they would... Like, you would see them get it to the side of the boat, and you'd be like, what do you do at that point? Like, there's nothing you could, they're absolute monsters, Goliath groupers. That would be 400-600-pound fish. Now, like you said, it's a 600-pound bass. They look exactly the same thing. You're like, that is a monster. That would be so cool
that would be awesome.
To catch. Absolutely. But you're saying there's one in your backyard that you would want to.
Yeah. I think. If there's two fish, I would say break 17 for a crappie, 17 inches, which is...
What's the record? Crazy, what's the Ontario record?
Oh, I'm not sure.
I'd have to look
probably
that
close
up.
To that.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's...
I actually, there are rumors of 17s. Gord has pictures of a 17-incher caught up.
Really?
Caught up here a very long time ago, yeah. I would like you to fact check that record. I don't know.
They only got by weight right now. It's 3 pounds.
Oh, yeah.
Almost 4 pounds, which is a monster.
That's great. That's crazy,
that's
though.
Crazy. Like, that is absolutely nuts.
A 17-incher wouldn't be 4 pounds. Maybe like 2 pounds or something, 2.5.
Yeah.
I don't even know, actually, when they get that big, how much they start to weigh. But 4 pounds, that scene, that thing would be...
That's ridiculous. That's ridiculous.
But yeah, like 17-inch crappie and mid to high 50s muskie. If I could crack 55.
Yeah.
56.
Yeah.
Those would be the two.
That's my... So that's... That I mean, that would be my muskie. But I'm not even shooting that high because I don't have the... it was funny because talking about hurting people's feelings, when I was talking to Gordon, I was like, I just went on a 3-day trip muskie fishing and I'm trying to learn how they are. And, you know, I didn't even... We got... A couple things that we brought up on sonar, but like I didn't get any hits. One of the guys I was with got one. He goes, yeah, if you're going for 3 days on average, you should get like a muskie every 8 hours, like on average. Like, so that might mean you get three at the end of your trip. And I was like, oh, cool. So I absolutely failed because we were there with the muskie were there. We were there. We just couldn't get it to commit. Again, knowledge is power. Learning more, I would do things differently going through.
Mm-hmm.
But that's my muskie, like my actual muskie. The only time I've caught muskie is when I wasn't fishing muskie. I was bass fishing. I was pretty much exclusively bass fisher for a large portion of my life. And I caught 36-inch, which is a tiny muskie, bass fishing. But that kind of triggered that rush.
Yeah.
And then this year was the first year that I kind of committed to trying to learn more about the species. So I blanked this year. I didn't catch nothing. Like I didn't which is embarrassing for the amount that I went out. 100%.
Oh, yeah.
The problem is I pretty much exclusively fished my own stuff, which, like I said, if you're fishing at the wrong time with the wrong bait, doing the wrong thing, you're not going to get strikes that you expect. And I was really just pushing my baits, which sometimes I was shallow and I shouldn't have been shallow, or I was in deep water and I wasn't getting the attention that I was getting. One thing that you guys taught me, sometimes when I'm in deep water, I'm fishing deep water. Doesn't mean that they're deep water. You could be in 40-foot column and they're in 5 feet of water. It doesn't mean that they're deep in those columns. So anyways, again, I'm hoping for more success this year, but I would, for me, because I wouldn't want the next fish I catch to be a 50 plus. As much as I would love that, I feel like I've ruined the chase for the thing. I would like the progress. I would like something mid to high 40s so that I can keep moving that peg. I would love that. Don't get me wrong. Obviously, I'd love to break the 50 inch club, but I'm setting the bar at 45. But that is something that for me, one of the trips that I would love to take. And I told my wife this, like, when I die, cremate me and then pick a trip wherever you want to go. You want to go to Ireland? She really wants to go over to, like, you know, Ireland.
Yep.
I said, cremate me. I want to be spread in Ireland so that it gives you a reason to take a trip to get out there and dump my ashes in Ireland. But now you're in Ireland. It was a trip that you felt worthy. I said, when you die, you just need to write that you want to be spread in Lake of the Woods so that I can take your ashes up there and I can spend some time up there. Maybe a week I'll spread your ashes out there so that I can grind out a good fishing trip, because that's how I'm going to get out there at this point in time with the kids and stuff like that. I need a trip to go out there, but that is a trip that I want to make at least once in the next couple of years. It's just grind a good trip out at Lake of the Woods.
Lake of the Woods is a beast.
Yeah.
Because it's not, everybody thinks that you go up there and it's going to be easy. Not the way it is. The thing about the lake is it can be very hard, very overwhelming. I mean, there's 14,522 islands.
Jeez.
So there's a ton of islands.
Yeah.
And it's a million acres. It goes from Kenora down to Minnesota, and then a little bit in Manitoba. It's a huge lake. And if you were to add up all of the shorelines, apparently you add up all of the shorelines. I haven't personally done it. But apparently it wraps around the globe twice, the Earth twice, with how much shoreline there is.
Yeah.
So you can fish a lot on Lake of the Woods and not ever touch it all. But it's one of those lakes where, I was telling one of my buddies this, but it's super hard in the beginning to figure it out and learn it. But once you learn it and figure out how it fishes, you can kind of fall in love with it, because one, it has giant fish. Two, it's so diverse and you can fish, you know, you can do it a lot of different ways. But when you kind of dial in on the lake, it is just such a cool body of water.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that style of, like, almost like Northern Ontario is big with, like, all those kettle lakes, I love that structure of tons of islands because for me, like I said, because I'm such a nerd with, like, topo and stuff, I love just looking at depths and where things are underwater. And like I said, it's rewarding just for the sense that I don't get out too much. So I would argue I spend more time researching a body of water and its topo versus actually fishing, because I try to utilize the time that I have when I'm out there, but I love looking. And then when you get islands, because you know, the east side of an island might be a straight dead drop off to like 60 feet of water, but the other one planes out for, you know, 30, 40 yards before it even hits 5 to 10 feet. So like that kind of thing just makes me so, that's what gets my gears going, is trying to plot those places. And that's probably why I'm so unsuccessful, because what I think is the right place to be, it's not the right place to be. So.
Well, yeah. I mean, and the other thing that about Lake of the Woods is when you find fish doing a certain thing, let's just say you find smallmouth pushed up on the windy side of an island in 5 feet of water. That's kind of broad, but you can replicate that so many different places on Lake Dawood.
Right.
Where if you find, like, fish doing that sort of thing on, like, I don't know, different bodies of water, less islands, larger bodies of water, you're limited to the amount of stuff you can hit that's the same as that.
Right.
But that's the one thing about Lake of the Woods is you can dial in on a pattern on Lake of the Woods. And it'll work all around the lake. I mean, not necessarily. Lake of the Woods is divided into 12. It's regulated in 12 separate bodies of water. Oh. So that's how diverse Lake of the Woods is. It's actually regulated, looking at the map.
I can see the corner.
As 12 different bodies of water.
Wow.
So they all function slightly differently, and they fish a little differently. So it's, you can't say, you can't generalize it that much that you can hit every similar spot on the lake and it'll, and you'll catch fish. But,
right.
But that's the beauty of it, is that, you know, you have that little island that drops off into 60 feet and then the other side planes out and takes a while to go to 5 to 10. But if you're catching fish on this side of the island and this, you know, depth, you have the ability to replicate that.
Right.
So that's the one thing that I always say to anglers is pay super, super close attention to so you caught a fish. There's a reason you caught that fish. That fish, it wasn't just there random.
Mm-hmm.
There's a reason you caught him there, because he was there. He was feeding. How do you replicate that?
Right.
Okay, well, you think, okay, well, he hit this, then it was in this depth on this piece of structure. And note that. If you literally take a note, you can, or if you just take a mental note, you also can.
Right.
But figure that out, because if you notice those things and you put it together, eventually you're going to start looking, and eventually it'll just click. You'll just realize, whoa, like, they're here because of this. And then you learn a little bit about biology. Maybe you listen, maybe you're trying to catch burbot and you listen to Jeff Maddity on our podcast talk about burbot, and then things just start to click. So that would be, honestly, like, is a huge piece of advice that sounds simple, but I think is often overlooked. Like, there's a reason that you caught that fish. It wasn't just there randomly.
Don't try to remove the luck out of the fishing portion. You can,
there's no luck.
You can, yeah, right. You can definitely, and I mean, and that's something, like I said, with the musky fishing that I'm trying to learn, even all my fails last year, and the, like, disheartening feeling of driving home, because sometimes I'm driving for, you know, 45, 50 minutes, sometimes 3 hours, and just trying to think about all the things I do wrong. There is solace in knowing that during those times, I can really say what I've done wrong. Like,
yeah.
So replicate the good, but you can also make sure that you don't replicate the things that because I never was that guy. I was never the guy that I'm like, I'm not catching anything here. There's a reason, because I know they're there. That's the one thing. If you know they're there, if you know the fish are there, you can kind of separate, because there's a linear thinking, they're eating or they're not eating. Like, that's like, linearly you can think, oh, they're just not biting today, but they are biting. They're eating something, like, and there's not just one fish. There's probably a couple. Mm-hmm. Like, there's ways to increase that chance. And that's what I'm learning. And like you said, through education, through podcasts like yours, which are invaluable, to get that information out there to make us more successful. And this year I feel it. I feel that we're going to hit that 40 this year. Musky opener, I'm tagging it this year.
You'll have to send me some pictures.
I definitely will. Well, I'm going to be picking your friggin' brain, because I'm going to... But anyways, listen, I appreciate your time. I appreciate... Where can these people find you? Like, what can I point them to? Everything will be linked in the bio and will be promoted, but let them know where you can be found.
Yeah. Wetter Fishing on all platforms. WHETTER, wetter, basically wetter with an H after the W, fishing. It's just a coincidence that wetter is my last name. It's kind of funny because I'm in the water. Oh, all the time.
That's right.
It kind of worked out all right. But wetter fishing, all platforms. If you're interested, I make YouTube videos too. Just started doing that recently. So kind of a place where I can kind of, you know, when I feel like sharing something, I share some knowledge, kind of get some insights in the day-to-day, or see how I dial in on certain things. So YouTube's kind of where I'm putting a lot of my time and passion right now. But wetter fishing, Instagram, Facebook, all platforms. And then obviously, like we mentioned today, the Doc Talks Fishing Podcast. We talk to a lot of guys with PhDs, and they have very fascinating things to say about about the industry.
Well, and so honestly, right now I can be the one that says the podcast is absolutely phenomenal. I love it. I've heard people that have listened to it that I've had people send me the link for it after I've already listened to it. So people are listening to it. If you don't listen to it, make sure, because I can contest that there is so much information for a fisher, as well as if you can read between the lines, the bait making, the things that you can take for making baits by learning these species and what you're actually targeting are absolutely phenomenal. There's so much information. So I can't recommend it anymore. Doc Talks Fishing on all platforms. I can guarantee you that, I see your Instagram stuff. It's only success pictures. You know what you're talking about. So I can make sure you're getting on that YouTube, guys. Like, share, follow, do all the things, because it helps. And I can speak from this from my point of view. It doesn't just help with algorithmic things and sponsorships and all those things. It helps to get the person to motivate to keep doing it. Like, sometimes just knowing that there's a couple people that like it, a couple people are watching, are enough to be like, oh, you know what? This is good information. I bet you those two people that watch are enjoying that thing, right? So like, seeing those follows boost up and seeing the comments, those all help with, again, algorithm, all of those things. But most importantly, in my opinion, it helps for somebody to produce a product that they want to keep producing. If you're just shouting out to the ether and there's no, you know, remnants of echoes coming back, it's hard to be like, I'm going to keep doing this. People will do it. And you know, it's the grind, but it just helps motivate somebody to keep putting out free content, right? Like and like I said, because I know your history, I know what you've done as far as the podcast goes, Instagram, all that stuff. I know that your YouTube's only going to be a ton of information and I wish you all the success in it. I know it's going to be fantastic.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
No, I appreciate it. So, and I appreciate you taking this time. Like I said, it's been an hour of your day. You're a busy guy. You're in school. Just dreaming about fishing all day long. So I appreciate you taking this time. Everybody, make sure you check those out. Like I said, like, share, follow, do all of the things. And thank you again for listening. Thank you for being a part of this. I hope everybody stays happy and healthy, and we'll see you on the water.